Can you hear me okay? Well, what a pleasure it is to be here with all of you. And what I'll speak about today are things that are not unknown to you. You're very highly progressive and advanced in many, many ways. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. Correct? Say yes. And however, my intention to come here today is to serve you in some way. We're only together for a short amount of time, but a lot can be accomplished in a small amount of time if there's information that's helpful to uplift the human spirit. And so I've put together some vital information that you already know about, but when it's formalized, you can always walk out with a fresh intention and a way to use the information so that you can better yourselves and your lives. Does that sound okay? About myself, my name is Vaisheshika Das. I was born William Suchek in Lafayette, California. That's in the East Bay. My parents were both teachers. They taught at San Francisco State University. And I grew up with a questioning spirit in my life. I wanted to know where I came from, what the purpose of life was, and so forth. I ended up, minus all the details, joining a monastery when I was 16 and spent 13 years living a monastic life. And from that, I took in a lot of information and practiced various tenets, which are universal, like learning to be patient and living without an excess and so forth. Later on, I got married and took up my education again. I got a degree at San Francisco State University, and I also started a business. And so there was a merging of these two worlds. That was the life I had as a monk, and also the life I had learning to export and integrate the values that I'd learned in the monastery and my life of contemplation into the, as we say, into the world and so forth. I did have to start from a basic level when I came back into the world. And therefore, I found that many of the principles that I'd learned in the monastery were also useful outside. And I found that there's a progression of information that anyone can use anywhere to improve themselves. And that's what I'll talk about today in the five steps to achievement. Also, in our time together today, I'll just ask you to give your feedback at intervals, which means that I may ask for reflections. A reflection is really easy. You don't have to think of a question. But if you have heard anything while I'm speaking that piques your interest or that you feel it is valuable that you can take with you, then just feed it back. And what happens, it amplifies that knowledge and everybody else gets to hear it. It's always interesting when I put something out and then you take it in and put it back. It becomes even more relevant because there's a cognition that you've taken it in. Does everyone feel like they could participate? Say yes. Thank you. So in the five steps to achievement, I, one day, in conceptualizing these ideas, I came across this quote, which really encouraged me, which is a quote by a favorite author of mine, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's from Bengal. And he writes in Bengali. And he wrote that intrinsic in every living being is the ability to rise in course of time. In fact, I came across this quote at a time when I was struggling to write a book. I finally did get it published. And however, it was a great experience for me because it was practically an impossible task. I had written the book many times in my mind, and when my editor called several times and said, "How's the book going?" I said, "Well, it's practically done." And she finally called the fourth time and said, "Well, send me something." And I didn't have anything. It was all here. But when I sat down to actually write down my ideas, I found that one sentence could take even an hour. And I thought, how am I ever going to complete a whole book? It reminded me of a famous author who once said, writing is easy, All you have to do is sit down in front of the typewriter and bleed. So I began thinking about the process of creation and how one achieves anything in life. And at that time, writing my book, feeling a little bit beleaguered, I came across this quote that intrinsic, in fact, the word intrinsic means to look inwardly. And it also has a medieval Latin root, which means that it includes the word sequel, which means that things can be done in a particular order. And that we're actually conscious beings, and that we have the propensity to rise in course of time. What does the word rise mean? It means to move from a lower level to a higher level. So we have that intrinsically within us, the ability to do that. However, sometimes the task at hand may seem overwhelming. And I must say, when I was writing my book, when I got midway through, I felt as if I was in the middle of the ocean and I was swimming and I didn't know when I was going to reach the shore. And all I could do was keep going. Have you ever felt like that with a big task? Like this child encountering this large stairwell? Anyone? Yes. So how to deal with that? Intrinsically, and a sequel, following one step after another. So here are five steps that I offer you today as a formula by which you can achieve anything in whatever discipline you're taking up in your life. So if you'll say them together with me, then we can get the energy moving. Number one, write your goals. Number two, get a house on fire desire. Number three, gather quality information. Number four, and number five, and how much should you practice?
A lot.
Practice a lot. So writing your goals, it sounds simple, and it is. Oftentimes some of the simplest things in life are the most profound. Occam's razor. There's a way in which writing down your goals actualizes your desires. In fact, there's scientific research that we were looking at before I came to give this talk that describes how we have two hemispheres in our brain. On the right side, we have the imaginative section, and on the left side, we have the more literal section. And the research shows that when you write down your goals, there's a connective tissue between the right and the left hemisphere that gets activated, and there's actually a fluid that runs up and down your spine. And when you write down your goals, the particular thoughts that you had on the right side and then that get actualized on the left side through the writing, the hand-brain coordination, it sends that fluid down your spine and into all the different areas of your body, your whole nervous system, including your muscles and bones and so forth. And it's as if the message that you sent now becomes pervasive in your body. It becomes part of you. And that's how you start to actualize the goals that you're eager to set for yourself. Not only that, in a very practical way, it's the simplest of external storage devices, writing something down on a piece of paper. One thing is, when you write it down, you really do have to prioritize. Because in writing, which is a lot more practical, kind of rubber meets the road, when you take a thought, a desire, a goal, and you write it down, you have to articulate it. And now you sort of prioritize and you write it out specifically. And it also gives you the ability to look at it again and again. Because every single day, we're confronted with many different choices. Everywhere we look now, especially nowadays, there are options that are vying for our attention. On screens, people will be calling us. There are a lot of ways that people can get to us nowadays too, right? Through all the devices that we carry around. So the more that we have a worthy goal to focus on that we ourselves have articulated in writing, the more we'll be prioritized and our mind will be focused. There's a text in the ancient Sanskrit, which I studied in the monastery, which says, Vyavaseyatmika buddhir, ekeha kurunandana, bahushaka hinantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. And it means the person who doesn't have a specific goal in mind has to settle for a brain or a mind that's many-branched, pulls in many different directions. The part of mindfulness is very practical. It actually means to have a very clear, worthy goal in front of you. Now, let me make this proposition. Which country are we sitting in now? Literally. United States of America? You sure? Okay, just making sure. I just came from Canada. Sometimes I get mixed up where I am. I travel a lot these days. But we're in the United States of America. And recently I was in Washington, D.C., and I visited the National Archives. And there I saw a copy of the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution of the United States. Have any of you seen these documents? It's really moving, isn't it? And one of my realizations about this was the power of the written word. In fact, in my book, I wrote a chapter about how the pen is mightier than the sword. And in fact, in the history of America, Thomas Paine, who wrote a document urging the colonists to rise up and start a revolution against the crown in England, it started because of a pamphlet that he wrote. He wrote it down. And it's to date, it's the per capita, it's the best-selling book that was ever written. Everyone in the colonies bought it. And that's what, according to historians, fomented, galvanized the revolution that began America. But how was it solidified? How was it all held together? With documents. Based on the Magna Carta, the founding fathers of America wrote down these documents. And if we didn't have them, we really wouldn't have a legal system, would we? Nor would we have had the direction that we have now, and we refer back to those documents and say, now, this is what our goals are for being in America. This is what the great experiment of America is. It's articulated in writing. If they had just said, we'll keep it in our head, the founding fathers, where would we be today? What is your name? So where would we be today if they had said, well, let's just not write it down. It's no big deal. We'll just keep it in our head.
Confused.
We would be confused. We would not have a very clear idea of a country or a purpose and so forth. So in a similar way, each one of us can write our own constitution. We can articulate our goals. And when we do, there's a kind of energy that comes up in our lives that moves us forward. It's remarkable, actually. If you keep it in your head, it'll have a very ethereal effect on you. It'll come around, your desire, your wish, the thing that you want to attain. You'll see it coming by every once in a while when you can't do much about it. And maybe you're in the shower, you're cooking, you know, your hands are full. It's like, yeah, I want to do that. When you finally sit down and actually write it, it starts to manifest in your life. And I will propose something in that all creations start from the subtle level and they come to the gross level. And when you write down your goals, you're actually manifesting something. It's there, ethereally. Thoughts are things. They actually are energy. It's a subtle energy. But when you transfer it to the paper, using your own hand and the coordination between the two hemispheres of your brain, then you start to manifest something on paper. It's in a more gross form. And from there, it projects outwardly, and you're able to create your environment, especially when you employ the next four elements of my plan for achievement. So writing goals is something that anyone can do. I recommend taking a little time by yourself, get a pen, get a legal pad, and some quiet time, and sit down and decide, what do I want? What do I really want? And that can be a conundrum, because I want you to imagine for a moment that you found out from your colleagues here at Intel that in the courtyard of your campus, there's a tree. And by sitting under that tree and just wishing whatever you want, your wish would come true. You have that in your mind? Yes? Okay, now, let's just say you went out there to sit underneath the tree. Do you have that in mind? Now, what do you want? Do you know what you want? You? It's a little hard question. Yes?
Happiness.
You want happiness? Okay. There may be very general things that we can ask for, but it's not such an easy thing. It's not something I think about every day. What exactly do I want? In fact, if you stood at Market and Powell downtown San Francisco and just stop people and say, what's the purpose of your life? They would say, purpose of my life, I'm in a hurry. I got to go home right now. I got things to do. Don't bother me with that. So this is a unique ability of humans. We can actually take time. And is it possible to go through a whole day without thinking about that? What do you think? Would then it be possible by extension to go a whole week without thinking about it? How about a month? 1 year? 10 years? 20? A lifetime. Lifetime unexamined is not worth living. There's a way in which one moment of full consciousness, of awareness of what I want, is so empowering that with a pen and a legal pad, if one sits down and makes that very clear to oneself, it brings all energies to bear, and one's life changes in that moment. So simple, yet so profound. Anyone can do it. So write your goals down. Ready for number two? Get a house on fire desire. When I was a monk, I had colleagues, and we used to go around the world to do service in various places. And two of my colleagues were a married couple, and they were asked suddenly to go to Japan. This is in the early 70s. When they were asked to go to Japan by our teacher, they said, only one thing, we don't speak Japanese, we know nothing about Japanese culture. And he told them a story. He said, once there was a man, he lived in a neighborhood, in a house, where nobody else spoke the language. And suddenly his house caught on fire. So how did he get the message across that he needed help? Maybe you can answer. Any way he can. And the fact is, when you have a strong desire, then your abilities rise to meet that desire. It's not the other way around so much. But if you strongly desire something as a human being, which is a unique creation in this world, you have the ability to develop the abilities. In fact, it's almost that they come to you because of your strong desire. So hone your desire, because if you're very eager to do something, you'll figure out how to do it. You'll do it in your spare time. You'll take those five-minute intervals that you have that oftentimes people squander on useless things, just staring into space, or even worse, staring into a screen. And if you have the desire, you'll organize your time more, and you'll seek out the kind of association that you need. In the old days before electricity, there was a way in which people used to keep warm their homes with a stove, and they'd keep the fire going, because back then when there were no matches, it was difficult to start fires. Now, if your fire happened to go out in your home and it was a cold day, it was more than a little bit uncomfortable. It was actually could even be dangerous. So one of the householders would then go to a neighbor somewhere and say, can you give me a little fire? And they would bring that coal back and then start their stove again. So one of the ways in which to develop this intense desire is to find other people who have it, and through association to develop that house on fire desire. So number one was write your goals. And we gave a little bit of evidence. There's a lot more that could be said about that, how powerful it is to write down your goals, to have them and write them down. Number two, get a house on fire desire. If you have a strong desire, then your abilities will rise to meet your desire. Ready for number three? Say yes. You got to have a house on fire desire, otherwise I can't go on. Okay. Number three is to get quality information. And I'll just talk about the word inform, because it's very interesting. I studied English literature, so I went into the science of words. And this word inform literally means, it comes from Latin again, and it means to give shape to something. It has the word form in it, inform. It's a kind of mystical process when you take in information that it starts to take shape in your life. And I was reading recently about how getting poor information has become a problem. There's a lot of information out there nowadays. And when we get information that's substandard, it tends to muck things up. So getting quality information, taking it in, will shape shape our lives in a very particular way. I'll make a proposition in that each one of us is a container. You can think of yourself as a container. And we heard and we hear frequently nowadays about contentment, do we not? Mindfulness and contentment. In fact, one of the purposes of the organization that this has organized this meeting today is about mindfulness. And so the question then is, since we are containers, where do we contain things, by the way? Where would you say? In your head? And you may even say in your heart, too, because we feel intensely with our heart. Have you ever had the sense, somebody said, you know, I knew this thing, but my heart told me something else. So we contain things here and here. And much Bill Morrow did a lot of research about the ways in which our whole body holds information. So we are literally containers for information, and that's what shapes our lives. So when we take in quality information, that's our content. And the word content and content are spelled exactly the same way. So you could just remember that your level of contentment is dependent on your content. And fortunately, we have a choice about what kind of information we take in. This is one of the most important of decisions that we make on a minute-to-minute, day-to-day basis. And that is, what information will I take in? Just remember that as you take it in, and for instance, a lot of it comes through the ears, some comes through the eyes, it will go in and it will fill up your heart, fill up your mind, and that will direct you in a particular way. Now, as far as a process goes, we need information to move forward. For instance, if you want to bake a cake, anybody here like to bake a cake? You're going to need information, okay? Two people. Well, you can get together afterwards. We can find a kitchen here. What you need to bake a cake is good information. You need a recipe, and it should be a good one. If it leaves something out, you're going to be lacking. So the quality of your life depends on the quality of your information. Also, the level of contentment that I feel in life depends on the content that I'm ingesting on a regular basis through my ears, through my eyes, and so forth. So this is one of the steps that is very important, to take in information or to get knowledge that is pertinent and that is effective and that is accurate. When you get that, then you can move forward in a very decisive way, in a correct way. Ready for the next one? Okay, first you have to tell me what the first three are so far. Number one? Okay, and somebody reflect back to me, or a few of you, anything you heard about writing goals. Why might it be important according to the theories that I'm presenting today? Yes? Oh, here, take the microphone because the people online are screaming at us.
It helps to connect the two hemispheres of your brain.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yes. There's a way in which the hand-brain coordination, it syncs up those two sides of the brain. And very practically, in the research that we read, there's even in a way in which there's a kind of systemic effect then. That information, that intention that I have, now gets distributed to the various parts of my body, and I'm motivated in a unique way now that I've written it down. Thank you. What else? So there are some others about writing your goals down. Yes.
You manifest your goal in a subtle form.
Yes. All creation, according to the physics, starts from a very subtle level and then extends outwardly and becomes more and more gross. And so all manifestations, for instance, if I wanted to build a skyscraper building, then it would start with a thought that I want to build a skyscraper building, and I'd really have to have a house on fire desire to do that. That would be a major chunk of one's life. But then I'd have to get good information. I'd write my goal down, and I could proceed from there. The idea of writing it then could begin to manifest outwardly. And if you really wanted to do it, could you do it? You may even be a contractor, I don't know. No, not that one. But if just say if you wanted to do it, could you do it? Anyone can do it. If you wanted to follow these steps, it's possible. Thank you. Yes.
I read about this cerebral spinal fluid which goes through the spine that you talked about.
Yes.
And so it's not only the brain, but also the entire body, because that fluid goes down your spine and connects with the rest of the body. So the whole body participates in that whole thing.
Amazing. Fantastic. Thank you. Yes, people say, I feel it in my cells. It's in my DNA. It could be very literal. And this is one of the ways that we distribute that intention. As fantastical as that may seem, that's how we operate. Yes, thank you. One more about goals? This side of the room's got to keep up, though. Over here, yes.
But so writing down these goals is not typing them on a computer. It's the actual, you just can't write down your goals and type it in on a screen.
Well, not according to the Big Pen Company, who did their own research. That's all I'll say about that.
Actual action. Okay.
You know, obviously with any research, everything can be questioned and gone into. I'm sure my experience of writing a book, I wrote most of it on a computer screen. Just the very fact that I articulated it in writing and there is a hand-brain connection was very real. There have been studies that talk about the importance of writing and cursive and so forth and how it relates to our brain processing. But try it out. See both. You know, there's something just so satisfying about a legal pad and a pen and a quiet room and your own thoughts. And I'm sitting under that tree at Intel that fulfills all desires. And what do I really want? That can release a lot of energy in my life and send me in a particular direction. Because most of the time, as we confirm together, it's possible even that I don't even know what I want. And if someone asks me, if someone grabs me by the arm when I go out of here and says, what do you want? Like, I want to go home. But no, what else do you want? So be clear and somehow or other get it down. Yes, there was one more. Okay. Then number two was get a house on fire desire. Let's see if we can get a couple of reflections on the house on fire desire. Yes. Okay, language doesn't matter. Your intention matters. Or, here, let him say it, because the people online want to hear the personality.
Have a desire like your house is on a fire, and always.
Yeah, if your desire is intense enough, then your abilities will rise to meet it. And your ability to communicate also will be profound, because you have a need, a strong need. It's very important. Now, we can come back to some of these, and I'm ready to go on to the next one. Are you? Yes? Okay. Next is to collect mentors. I have a picture here of Andre Agassi and Brad Gilbert. It always struck me that Andre Agassi, for those of you who don't follow tennis or who were born past the 80s, he was a famous tennis player. He was top of his game for almost a decade, top in the world. And he had another tennis player. He used to be on the circuit, Brad Gilbert, who was his mentor and his coach. And it always struck me how Andre Agassi was a much better player than Brad Gilbert, but he needed that mentorship, as does everybody. Between every line of information that we get, when we take in good information, there are 100 or 1,000 questions that we have to ask. And interestingly, when we find somebody who's a mentor, and I'll say that someone who's seasoned, like a captain who's been across the sea many times, knows or she knows the ways of nature. For instance, red skies in the morning, sailors take warning. Red skies at night, sailors delight. All these are known to somebody who's experienced in something. And recently when I was studying a percussion instrument, it was a drum, and I sat down with my teacher and was learning day by day how to play various beats. They come in mantras and a little bit complex. They have to take a lot of time to reprogram the brain and practice and so forth. But my experience with my mentor was that I was practically, if I may use this term, downloading the information and the experience that he had had and the association he had had with many of his exalted teachers, the hours and hours of time that he had spent practicing over many years that was already in his DNA, that was coming to me as if I was had connected a cord, or more aptly, it was Bluetooth or something. And it was coming from him into me. And this was a practically a visceral experience. And when I came away from the time with my mentor, each time, each lesson, I'd feel more confidence just watching him and so forth. So this mentorship is one of the keys in the process of achievement. If you find good mentors, and they can be, of course, we say collect, which means that it's plural. There are many mentors you can collect for various aspects of your life and for various aspects of achieving your goals. And when you find them and you remain open to learning from mentors, then you'll move along very steadily in the achievement of your goals. Last one, practice. So this practice is something that by taking a small filament and then adding on to it another filament the next day, and the next day another filament, turns into a thread. And if I continue adding to that, then I get a cord. And then I start to develop a small rope and then an unbreakable rope. There's a famous violinist, Joshua Hevitz, who once said that if I don't practice one day, I notice it. And if I don't practice 2 days, my teacher notices it. And notice he's a world-class musician, but he's got a teacher, mentor. And he said, if I don't practice 3 days, everybody notices it. And so this practice is vital for moving forward to achievement. If I let the trail go cold and I don't practice, then there's a way in which I won't be able to call on that talent. I won't be able to actually say that I deserve the achievement. And I want to read you a quote that I found. It's a little bit poetical, but it makes the point about practice, I think, very well. It's at the bottom of your handout, very bottom, the last quote. Music is a proud, temperamental mistress. Give her the time and attention she deserves, and she is yours. Slight her, and there will come a day when you call, and she will not answer. So I began sleeping less and giving her the time she needed. I found this profound, this metaphor, that this practice means we develop a quality in which we can call on a talent at any particular time that will come and be there as our assistant and a friend. And it's something that we have to schedule every day. And as we do, we'll find that we'll gradually move towards our desired goal and be able to achieve anything. I mean, practically, when you look at a picture of two hands on a keyboard here, what I think is that's impossible. How could you possibly organize all your fingers to be doing different things at the same time and perhaps even reading a musical sheet with your eyes? And how could you do that? It's impossible, isn't it? What do you think? It's impossible to play the piano, correct? There's an emphatic no. You can say emphatically no. No, Vaisheshika Das, wrong, bad. No, it's possible, but how? You start off in a very simple way, in a humble way, deliberate way, practicing. And if you apply yourself for 1 day, 3 days, 7 days, you'll notice that you improve. So all practice is magical. And if you precede that with the proper information, you have a mentorship, and you have a goal, and your desire is very strong, practice becomes ambrosia, practically. It enlivens the human experience. Nothing is as encouraging as progress in one's own self, and seeing that if I focus in one place and I have a worthy goal and I practice towards it every day, I can improve myself. Because practically it seems that the world becomes a place where I can create and I can develop, and it's very encouraging. So it's intrinsic in our nature to rise, to be able to step by step follow a sequence so that we improve ourselves. However, if I leave out various parts of this, of course, any of them that we use, even independently, will be very effective. But if you put these five together, then you'll find that there's an upliftment of the human spirit, an awareness of the very possibilities that I have in myself, and that there are forces that are beyond me. It's almost a metaphysical experience that are coming into my mental system, that I'm calling to me by following these five steps, through which one becomes enlightened and integrated with the world in a very profound way. So now we'll take a minute to review the five steps. Let's just say them aloud. Number one, right. Number two, get a house on fire desire. Number three, gather quality information. Number four, collect mentors. And number five, practice. And how much? A lot. Practice a lot. And if you follow these five steps, then I guarantee you, you'll have an experience which is very fulfilling. And you'll also make progress in whatever discipline you apply yourself to. But, of course, there's so many things that we can do, and there's no end to them. Birds fly in the sky as high as they are able, but the sky is unlimited. So it's not that we're become satisfied when we reach a particular level, but the journey is the reward. As we enter into this, we find out more about ourselves and our abilities. And, as I said earlier, the ways in which there are powers that are offered to us when we're very deliberate in our way of approaching our particular discipline. And now we have an opportunity, if you have questions, and we also have an opportunity for reflections. And just to say, reflections are a lot easier than questions. So, but I would like to take some reflections from you, because you're among the elite people in the whole Bay Area working here at Intel. And please reflect back to me anything that you've heard so far in this monologue, and that you're taking away from here. Any one concept, idea, anything that stimulated your intelligence, and when you walk out of here, if someone grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in here? What's the one thing that you're going to tell him? I'm going to pull this up so it's more like a fireside chat. Yes.
One thing I heard that has stood out for me is when you say, when your fire goes out, be with other people who are passionate and you can reignite your fire. That was powerful.
Yes. Then when we gave this presentation last night, someone said, how can you maintain a house on fire desire all the time? And my immediate answer was, you can't. it's natural, because there are so many distractions and enervating forces in the world that my fire may go down. But knowing how to get it back up, and also knowing how important it is to have a strong desire, is vital and important. And by finding people who have that, who have the momentum, and being near them, will do the trick. like going and getting fire. Yes. Yes.
So my question is, it seems like the most, one of the most challenging aspects of this is to figure out your goal and figure out what you want if you were sitting under that tree. And do you have guidance on how people can meet that challenge?
You know, thank you for bringing that up. And it is, you're absolutely right. Take time for introspection. Because, you know, Eric Fromm, the famous sociologist, writes about freedom to and freedom from. And he opines that we're afraid of our own freedom. Oftentimes we give it away. We'll subject ourselves to tyranny even, because it's easier to be mindless and not feel that responsibility of freedom. And in that, there is this question, what do I want? I mean, there can almost be a hesitancy, because what if I actually realize what I want, and then now I have the responsibility to go for it? As I realize, as a human, I have a modicum of freedom to decide my own destiny. And I can write it down, and I can say, this is what I'm going to do now. So this is, I mentioned this, it's really metaphysical. It's being with yourself and, you know, saying, self, what do I want? What do we want here? Who am I? Why am I even here? This is such a core and important question that one of the wisdom literatures that I've studied for many years says this is the key question of life. And now is the time to ask it. Don't wait. Ask the question, and also, when you get in touch with that, what do I really want? And, you know, remove the layers and find out what's the most important thing to me, then the answers are forthcoming also. That's also sort of a very mystical experience, that there are answers that are available. There are resources that are available to those who know what they want. It's hard not to know what you want. It's very perplexing. So my advice is take some time by yourself and sit and think. And also, think on paper. Write down things. Go over it again and again. And go deeply within it. And do that on a regular basis. It's so clarifying. And there's a way in which your whole life becomes more accessible to you. There's a sort of a spring in your step when you've taken time for yourself. We take time for so many other things and for so many other people and duties. But the main duty that we have is to ourselves. But what do I want? So try it. I recommend a legal paper, a legal pad, and a Bic pen. No, I'm not paid by them. This is a Japanese pen. Thank you for such a nice question.
Just to add on top of that, usually, keeping myself in that perspective, people get a little frightened when they have to put their thoughts on paper, because it's almost like you're binding yourself to that. But what I think personally is, what is liberating is when you think it's okay. We can fine-tune it. It might not be a perfect wish that the tree would wish it would grant the wish right away, but you can fine-tune your wish, because if something was important for me 5 years from now, things change as my phases of life change. So importance and priorities keep changing. So one thing that I do personally is reevaluate what my goals are at different phases of life, and maybe that helps to liberate and start writing it down, because by writing it down, you're not framing it for the rest of your life. You're saying, this is what I want for now. Maybe this will change if my circumstances change or things in life change and priorities change. So this is what I want now, and that will help to come with that burning desire, is the way I would look at it.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much. Yeah, entering into it with the idea that if I write it, if I have the freedom to think about it and write it, I also have the freedom to amend it later, right? After all, we mentioned the Constitution. There were the amendments after that. Many more coming probably too. So we can amend things. And also you mentioned framing. This is an important concept, framing. Guy Kawasaki, who was one of the founders at Apple, wrote a book called The Art of the Start. He's an entrepreneur that helps people start companies. And in it, he writes this concept, frame or be framed. If you don't frame your reality and you don't frame what your goals are, someone will frame them for you. So many people come calling and say, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? If you have your paper, you just like, I would, but I already got it. It's right here. I have my frame ready. This is how my life is framed for me. And as you're pointing out so helpfully, that we can always reframe it. But you take charge of that. You decide, what do I want? How do I frame my life? What am I? What's my purpose? And so forth. Very important. Thank you. Yes.
So we have some questions from the online audience. And so starting with, in this process of achieving goals, how do you deal with failures and disappointments?
Well, as I wrote in one of the sections on your handout, a concept that my teacher taught me many years ago, and that is failure is the pillar to success. And we have to take a lesson from everything that happens to us in life. This is the pinnacle of intelligent living, is take the lesson, because there's actually a fruit behind failure that comes to us and makes us even stronger. It's there in nature when you break a bone and you set it again, then it grows back 7 times stronger than it was before. In a similar way, when we make mistakes and we find out what doesn't work, we become more informed about how to move in the world. Failure is actually, and missteps don't need to be detrimental. They become the pillars for success. And in fact, very progressive people everywhere, even in the corporate world, know this, don't they? Isn't it fail forward fast? Yes, and one of the biggest advertising agencies in the world, the one who came up with the Nike swoosh, they have a huge poster or mural in one of their offices that says, fail harder. How about that? So if you understand that progress means that you have to undergo some challenges, and that's what makes you mature. There is no replacement for maturity in this world. It's so rare and valuable because maturity means that someone keeps going despite the fact that there seem to be mishaps and challenges as one advances. So that's a way of organizing one's thoughts as one moves forward towards one's goal, is taking the lesson behind the failure and becoming stronger. You might also study history and find out that the most successful people in the world often were the biggest failures as well. And Steve Jobs, at his Stanford inauguration speech some years ago, talked about his biggest failures. How about starting a company that's up and coming and one of the best and brightest companies in the world, and then get fired from your own company? How does that feel? Well, as he said, not very good, until he went back to the drawing board and felt that, okay, now's a chance to start over. And that's a very powerful thing to have. It's an asset, actually. He started over, and he started Pixel, which became even bigger. And he thought back to the various failures he had in his life, and he said, these were dots that actually marked my path of success. I couldn't count them forward. I could only count them backwards. But if you're very proactive about that, you can develop an understanding that failure is actually informing me. It's helping me to move forward. And to be successful, it's very important to have that. Otherwise, you can just become a victim. And there's a lot of information about victimology out there. Don't become a victim. Become an adaptable person, a person who adapts to failure. Thank you.
Thank you. And one more question on how do we identify the right mentors?
Well, just like how do you identify the right doctor? If you go to a doctor and, you know, you might say, you know, how long have you been doing this? Well, just a little while. Where'd you go to school? I didn't really go to school. I just read a book. Lie down on the table. I got a knife. You check the credentials. What do other people say? Did they study the science? Are they expert at what they do? And are they compatible? Do they have a mood of reaching out and helping you and teaching you? Kind of a natural thing to find a teacher who has those qualities, and they are available. And if you find them, you're very lucky. I recommend keeping a Rolodex full of mentors for various purposes in your life, because this is a very intelligent and powerful way to overcome challenges find the people who can help you in various niches in your life and depend upon them to help you solve problems. Very progressive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And one more, which is, not all information is quality information. So how do we get only quality information?
Well, it's similar to the mentorship idea. You have to study the source. And, of course, we all accept axiomatic truth at some point. Anybody who studies any science knows that without some kind of axiomatic truth and also studying the source and trusting the source of your information, minus that, you have infinite regress in your life. You have to find a source that you trust. And that requires a little research. And once you find that, do your due diligence, find where good information comes from, and test it, and then move forward. Otherwise, as Socrates said, an army that continues to retreat will never be successful. You have to move forward at some point with the knowledge that you've vetted and you see as qualified and quality information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One more interesting question here.
The internet is alive.
So the question is, the idea of house on fire, desire all the time, seems to be in contradiction to the idea of feeling at peace and quiet all the time. So how do we resolve that ambiguity?
Well, the sense of house on fire desire doesn't mean that one becomes passionate or a fanatic or an annoyance to everybody else in society. Although that image is there, it becomes evident in one's ability to sustain one's practice over time. Oftentimes, people who have that intense desire within their heart are defined really by the quality of steadiness. Because when you have a very strong, you can't fake steadiness, that's one thing. There's a lot of things we can fake in this world, like humility, like, But steadiness you can't fake because you actually have to show up. You have to be there. And that is the real symptom of a house on fire desire, that you don't quit, you keep going. So that's more of the symptom. We express it as house on fire desire, and it can sound like passion or something that becomes demonstrative externally, that may be over the top. But that's something, that house on fire desire, you have to keep it in a little stove burning in your heart where the heat comes out in a sustained way over time and keep it going and keep it burning.
This is a question along the lines of what both the gentlewoman had asked before. I think in life, I think there might be many times where you might have two contradicting goals. I think goals which are going in completely opposite directions. How would you prioritize trying to achieve both of them, actually? Or how would you find a balance in trying to achieve or make progress towards both of your goals? Like, sometimes your responsibilities as a parent, as a employee at Intel or something, might prevent you from making progress towards one of your goals, which actually gives you more inner peace, more satisfaction. So how would you try to balance or make progress towards completely different goals?
Well, a couple points. One is that you might make a goal to be balanced in your life. Because balance doesn't mean that you're always stationary. It means that you know how to pull back to the center. For instance, if I stand up on one leg right now, which I'm just about to do, just so you feel entertained. Did that help? Now I'm standing on one leg. And near the edge. So I'm not absolutely still, although I'm balancing. I'm pulling back and forth. So now balance, and even now that it looks like I'm more stationary, there's a lot of fast twitch muscles going in here that are holding, they're going back and forth thousands of impulses a second to make me stationary. So similarly in my life, I may have various duties to do, and I need to know how to pull back to the center. What is my center? And that goes back to this exercise of knowing my overall purpose in life. Just like in business management, there's the X and Y axis. the x-axis, then we have our overarching purpose of the corporation. On the y-axis, we have the individual departments that have to keep in mind what the overarching purpose of the company is. Otherwise, within each one of the divisions here at Intel, you can get into what's called bounded rationality, where each one thinks I'm independent and I don't need to cooperate with everyone else. In fact, our department's the best. Everyone else can go to hell. So we have to be clear simultaneously what our overarching goal is and what the individual goals are within my life. So those things are important. And also, I just mentioned as a final point that every discipline in our life affects the other disciplines. So when I take time to follow these 5 points, that I will, it will have a systemic effect, and it will assist all the other things that I'm doing in my life. And I just want to point out as a point of synergy, I don't know how this happened, but when I dropped the thing, it went to the last slide, which says thanks. So I'll take that as divine intervention, and I thank you all very, very much. It's been a real pleasure to be here, back here at Intel, where mindfulness and the productivity is going on in such a wonderful way. Thank you so much. Thank you.